for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And today we are opening up with Rebels Season 3, Steps into Shadow.
Parts 1 and 2.
These are a lot of fun. We start right off.
Are they?
Yes.
Are they fun or are they engrossing?
For more on why these are so fun, please become a Patreon and listen to my episode on why Y-Wings.
The answer to why Y-Wings was always, why not Y-Wings?
Mm-hmm. But we get ahead of ourselves. We start off and Spectre 6, FNG Ezra is sitting there, new haircut, who dis, as they storm an Imperial prison to free none other than Hondo Onaka and his loyal sidekick, Turba.
His Ugnaught friend.
As they leave, Ezra is like, coming up with a plan, everything's going really great. Turba runs ahead to the exit and is immediately blown up by a scout walker. And Ezra grabs the driver with the force of the scout walker and uses it to shoot all of the scout walker's friends and then fall off the cliff.
Yeah,
so we've already entered a dark phase.
The force theme is playing as Ezra's doing this, but it's like twisted and it's in a minor key. And there's weird chanting in the background. And it's because we've never seen anybody on the light side use the force to kill people before in the way that Ezra does.
It is. Ezra is getting a lot of kills as he goes through this whole setup.
And Sabine's like, when did Kanan teach you that? And Ezra's like, he didn't. Da, da,
da. Da, da, da. So we get back to the base on Attilon. And Ezra is like, hey, successful mission. He's getting chewed out by Hera because Turba did, in fact, get blown up. And Hera's like, you need to be aware of the parameters of the mission. He's like, I was aware of the parameters of the mission, Mom. He's in his quarters. And eventually, after getting talked to by Hera, Kanan comes by and is standing there talking to Ezra. Ezra has the Sith holocron unlocked on this shelf, and Kanan, being blind, bumps into it and says, you can't be doing this, and he confiscates it. However. Yeah.
So they were going to have a nice heart-to-heart, and instead, Dad has taken away his son's special toy. Cue drama.
So Kanan is sitting there continuously at the edge of the base, surrounded by the little tiny snail creatures, and meditating, and he's hearing a voice. And eventually he picks up and takes one of the protector sensor spikes and walks off towards the voice.
Well, so season two friends will remember that A, Attilon is at risk of the giant wraith spiders. So they have to keep sensor beacons around the whole camp to keep from getting murdered by the spiders. B, Kanan lost his eyesight in the season two finale. So he's blind.
He's carrying a stick which protects him from spiders, and he wanders into the wilds. There he meets a giant coral minotaur.
A god king.
Yeah, named the Bendu, who says the Jedi and the Sith are the Ashla and the Bogan. I'm the one in the middle. I'm the Bendu.
Ooh, I'm the Bendu! I want to say that.
The Bendu begins teaching Kanan many things about himself, stripping away Kanan's ideas of self, and also snaps, like opens the Sith holocron. It's not dangerous. It's just an object. And also snaps the protector stick. So Kanan is now stranded out there. However, the A plot, the rest of the Spectres have a plan to go rescue these Y-Wings. That's the information that Turba, Rip, and Hondo had. They need to first hit a turnpike in the middle of space where they are immediately beset upon by Mining Guild TIE fighters, which they destroy and evade. Ezra wants to leave no witnesses, and they're like, that's not the mission. We're not here. We're not just pirates. We're not just killers.
Dark.
they get to their final destination and see that this Y-Wing factory is rapidly disassembling these Y-Wings. And if they scout it out and go back, there's not going to be any Y-Wings left for them to steal.
Yeah, so the intel that Hondo, that they acquired from Hondo at such high cost, was that there's a Y-Wing dismantling factory. And if they can get in there and get out, then they could form an entire squadron to bulk up the Rebels' fleet and make a strike squad. However, the Y-Wings are getting incinerated rapidly.
And then finally, in the first half of this, we get to loom in on the Imperial fleet. Governor Price is back. She had been mentioned way back in season one, where Minister Tua, also Rip, was like her little underling. Governor Price is actually quite scary. And she's like, Constantine sucks. Kallus, you're okay. Tarkin, I wish to have the 7th fleet. And Tarkin's like, yeah, fine.
Bring me the big guns.
Bring me the big guns. And so the big guns roll up, and it is Grand Admiral Thrawn, recently promoted for brutality, who is like, I will tear the Rebels apart piece by piece. Here is what their plan is, as if I am reading this script 5 minutes before everyone else.
He's blue. He's got red eyes. He's got cheekbones that could cut cheese.
And he's got a delightful way of speaking, which is deeply alien.
Yeah, he puts the accent on just the wrong syllable, just barely the wrong syllable, so that everything sounds very expensive and also very space.
And that is where we end the first half of Steps into Shadows. Where do we pick up in the second half?
Well, part two is pretty much exclusively the Y-Wing heist. So Ezra leads the Phantom and the crew closer down to the salvage yard. They're fighting off these mushroom-shaped dismantler droids. You know, for the first time, not for the last time, that they're going to square off with those this episode.
Rex is riding with them, and he's like, clankers, let me at him. I will take them apart with my fists. I hate robots.
1, 2. They do almost crash into the fiery depths of the planet because of the dismantler droids. But Sabine manages to get them docked to the part of the station where the Y-Wings are being incinerated. And Hondo bribes the remaining Ugnaughts working the factory. And he gets them to stop the conveyor belt so that they can salvage the rest of the Y-Wings and get them back online.
Importantly, this station is like floating in the upper atmosphere of a gas giant or above a planet. And so it's hovering. You can breathe the air. And if you fall too far, you explode.
Yes.
Those are the rules of the game.
Thank you for laying out the rules. They are important. Before they can take off with the remaining Y-Wings, they have to refuel them. And as they're working on that, Commander Titus, who you will remember from season two, was Admiral Titus.
Blomp, blomp.
Admiral no longer. He has been deeply demoted, and he is in line for another one. He calls into Governor Price, and he's like, yo, there's rebels here. What do we do? And he locks down the Y-Wings while he waits for further instructions. So Ezra, Hondo, and the Ugnaughts sprint off to 1-2 punch Commander Titus into unlocking the Y-Wings. So they go off to the control tower. The Spectres are dealing with just an extraordinarily malicious dismantler droid.
And these things are, they're 10 feet high. They have like sort of a bubble body, but they also have like chainsaws and flamethrowers, and they're mean.
They're kitted up like Mandalorians is what they are.
And they're bullies. Like Sabine gets knocked onto a Y-Wing. Chopper gets shocked and thrown on top of a Y-Wing. And this thing's like bouncing up and down on the Y-Wing trying to shake them off. Like they're mean.
It is outrageous. They do fine because of Rex. Thank the Force.
Plus 4 bonus versus robots.
Yeah. And then Ezra storms the bridge of the control tower. He sees Titus. He's like, nice demotion. I hope you're looking forward to another one. He kills the power to the entire station with his lightsaber. And that, yes, unlocks the Y-Wings, also sends the station hurtling towards a fiery doom.
Ezra's like, oh, it's fine. I'll take the Phantom.
Yeah, so Sabine and Zeb and Chopper and Rex pilot as many of the Y-Wings as they can into the upper atmosphere. And Ezra's going to take the Phantom. And then things go terribly wrong. The Y-wings have no hyperdrives. Something knocks the Phantom into the gas giant.
Rip Phantom.
It tumbles off the station. Ezra is stuck. And the Empire shows up with so many TIE fighters.
A full Star Destroyer, as well as a lot of TIE fighters. Yeah.
Very fortunately, the grown-ups have been making moves this entire time. Hera has been mobilizing the Rebel fleet to go rescue the Spectres because Ezra missed his call-in, mm-hmm. as one does. And Kanan has been training with the Bendu. He asks the Bendu, how he can get his sight back. And Bendu tells him that he has to empty himself, fill himself with the Force, and walk forward into the spiders. As Kanan walks, he realizes the spiders are not attacking him. Because he has emptied himself of emotions, they don't sense his fear, his anger, his hatred, the danger. So they're just chilling. When he gets a vision of Ezra being in danger, he is filled again with fear and anger, and they react. And so he sees them for what they really are.
Yes, which is deeply empathetic. When you are afraid of them, they're afraid of you, and they'll kill you first.
So Kanan learns that his fear and anger have been cutting off his connection to the Force. And now that he can see himself and the creatures around him for what they really are, he doesn't have anything to fear from being blind. He's not blind. Mm-hmm. He can see. So he makes this connection just in time to hop into the Ghost and rescue Ezra from truly the closest to death Ezra has ever been.
It's about 4 seconds after they pull Ezra off this plummeting station before the station explodes.
Yeah, Ezra is clinging to the side of the station. It is tumbling towards the gas giant. He looks up. Hera and Kanan are soaring towards him. Kanan says, "I got him." He opens up the airlock. He reaches out for Ezra. He says, "Don't worry. Let go." Ezra lets go. He gets sucked out into space, and Kanan's hand snaps out and grabs him, mm-hmm. pulls him inside, and they take off. They rescue the Y-wings. The Rebel fleet gets away. Importantly, because Thrawn let them.
Yes. So the Rebel fleet is sitting there. They bring in the carrier. They land the Y-wings in it. And Price is sitting there on the Star Destroyer with Admiral Constantine, who apparently she outranks, and Kallus. And she's like, "I've radioed Thrawn to let him know what we've found." And Thrawn holograms in and he's like, "Nope, this isn't the whole fleet. Let them go. Let them take their meager takings.
Let them escape with their meager reward." Mm-hmm. And then all of the imps are like, "What's up with that?" And Governor Price says, "Rest assured that Thrawn has a much larger objective in mind than the capture of a single rebel cell."
Mm-hmm.
Which to date, pretty much only Deidre Mira has figured out.
Yes. So, yes. A lot of people die in this episode, but also a lot of things change. And another important bookkeeping note is that as Kanan leaves the Bendu, he leaves the Sith Holocron with the Bendu.
Yes. So Kanan and Ezra wrap up this episode. Hera demotes Ezra.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Well, suspends him.
Fair. They make plans to deliver the Y-wings to General Dodonna. So these are not their Y-wings. They are to finance the bulking up of the entire Rebel fleet. And Kanan and Ezra finally get to have that heart-to-heart that they missed in episode 1. Kanan tells Ezra, 1, the Holocron is safe. 2, they're going to find another way to take down the Empire. 3, Kanan will always come back for Ezra.
Yeah.
Ezra doesn't have to grow up so fast.
Yeah. So, although it starts off really dark, it does end on a much lighter note.
Man, just an incredibly confident season opener.
Yeah. So, it is inferred that 6 months have passed.
That is a long time for Kanan to have been AWOL.
Yeah, but it also explains Ezra's absolute resentment towards him.
Yeah, so everyone gets a new look this season, and some people get new vibes. So Ezra has a truly unfortunate buzz cut and a truly unfortunate attitude problem.
He also grew quite a few inches.
Yeah, he and Sabine are both taller.
And he also got a new lightsaber and now carries a blaster and has no qualms about killing people anymore.
Yeah, he did not replace his stun gun lightsaber with another stun gun. He is shooting to kill and lightsabering people in half 100% of the time.
He has some really cool moves right in the opener where like a hallway full of stormtroopers shows up and he does like a quadruple axle spinning
barrel roll.
Yeah, blade move of 1,000 cuts and chops 4 of them in half. He's like, cha-cha-cha-cha.
Hondo's like, is that Ezra Bridger?
Sabine says, most of the time.
Sabine has a very beautiful digital purple lavender pixie cut, which I'm a huge fan of.
And Kanan is now wearing a sort of partial helmet that covers his eyes.
And he has just a luxurious Jesus beard.
Yeah, he grew his beard out.
It glistens in the sun. It is lustrous. It is a Pantene commercial.
And yeah, and we do get to see his eyes, which are, he has had a lightsaber cut across the bridge of his nose, hitting both of his eyes when he takes off his mask to view the Bendu, so.
I guess that's not what I expected him to look like. I had kind of thought that Maul's lightsaber went right across the corneas.
I think it might have even just gotten close enough to like boil, flash burn everything. I think that Kanan was able to dodge back fast enough to not get the crown of his head chopped off, but still got his eyeballs cooked.
Okay. I thought there was going to be some pretty gnarly scar tissue.
Well, it is a kid's show.
Okay. I was prepared for it to be...
really gross.
Quite upsetting.
Yeah. No,
it looks pretty cool.
You know, it's the funny side of like American media is we're like, we will kill so many people with bullets and show no blood or wounds. And one single nipple is like game over. It's we have such weird ideas of like what's appropriate and inappropriate for an audience. But
I mean, in a way, I find it relaxing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said last week, what is going to happen to my sunshine show?
Yeah.
So it is nice that someone is still cushioning me from all of the punches. I do appreciate that.
From just like gaping holes in his head.
Yeah. They're not shielding me from the emotional punches. I am very upset about my baby Bridger. But
speaking of emotional punches, I really want to hear your take on Ezra and his like fall and possible recovery to the dark side. Because he's real dark. His themes are different. He has a meanness about him. Like when this poor Commander Titus is sitting there. Yeah. His poor butt monkey.
The most mediocre butt monkey.
And he's like, it's no good. I've locked them down. The only way to free them is to destroy the station. And Ezra's like, fine. And he's like, wait, you'll kill us all. And Ezra's like, I trust everyone to get out of here alive. I don't know about you, though. And that's like, he's mean.
He's like, I trust my friends to be fine. I don't give a single hoot about your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have some complicated feelings about Ezra. Maybe we can talk through them. It never bothered me much to see people in Star Wars killing with blasters. Mm. That is kind of what they do. It bothers me with Ezra because he was so conscientious for 2 whole seasons.
Yeah.
To stun and not kill and to use his lightsaber to deflect things into the wall rather than into people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's right for me to put that pressure on Ezra. Like, he's not allowed to grow. I just don't like the direction he's growing in.
You know, it is funny because when they get Hondo, Sabine hands Hondo one of her twinned blasters. He's like, oh, I'm keeping this. And she's like, no, you're not. And they're running around corners and everyone's blasting stormtroopers. And it's still incongruous that Ezra is blasting people with stormtroopers or blasting stormtroopers with a blaster.
Yeah. And I know that the show wants us to feel this way because when Ezra uses the Force to turn the Walker against the Empire, it is very clear that the showrunners want us to see this as a perversion of the skill that he has previously used to connect to the living Force and protect things.
He is dominating the driver, and they really relish in the scene. All the stormtroopers are sitting there, like, waving at the driver, like, no, we're your friends.
The rebels are over there.
And they're getting blasted off this bottomless cliff.
Well, and so the Force theme is playing in a twisted and upsetting way throughout that scene. Even the end credits rebel song has been slowed down. And it is very anxiety-inducing.
Yeah.
So we know what we're supposed to feel about this. Okay. You asked me about my feeling. Here's my feeling. This is an upsetting portrayal of a teen being led down a dark path that doesn't serve them. Ultimately, I think Rebels has an optimistic feeling about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was a teenager, I was desperate for anybody, for any single person to know what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebels gives Ezra Kanan, who does understand what's going on with him, who taps out for 6 months,
yeah,
does come back, does help Ezra, and does take the burden of adulthood from Ezra's shoulders and, like, relieves him of the pressure he's been carrying so he can still be a kid. Ezra lets go. Kanan is there to grab him. It is symbolic of Ezra not needing to inhabit the space that he's been inhabiting because of Kanan's absence.
Yeah, because he does have to kind of bully, not bully, but he's using the Sith holocron, which is speaking to him, to gain power. And he's fueling it with resentment and anger, resentment that Kanan isn't there for him. And he's using it to pull off these daring missions. And he's had, apparently, several successes up to the point where Hondo is being rescued. And everyone sees it, and everyone's for it, but he's also alienating people. You know, Rex and Sabine are sort of the angels and devils on his shoulders, like, hey, you need to listen to us. And Zeb's like, I just love killing stormtroopers. Like, this is great.
Yeah. Ezra is acting from a place of scarcity. He is not old enough, experienced enough, or resourced enough to be taking on the missions he's taking. He's using the Sith holocron to fill in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I need more power and more knowledge. I need to be stronger so that no one can ever hurt my friend, so I can be the man I need to be. Kanan learns how to act out of abundance this episode and is able to kind of effortlessly fill in that lack in Ezra because he is old enough and he does have enough knowledge and confidence. So it's like I see it as Kanan restoring the balance to Ezra that was created because of this vacuum that Kanan left. He was like an absentee dad, and then he came back.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And so at the end of the episode, I think it seems like Ezra is significantly less troubled. However, he is like, hey, so where's that Sith holocron?
Yeah.
Like, it's safe. Are you sure? Maybe I should watch after it.
Are you sure you gave away my Xbox?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like in the closet somewhere? Yeah. Wink, wink.
So I think that's... I mean, I wonder at the end of this, do we feel that Ezra has reached a new state, a new status quo with Kanan? Or is he still on a negative trend and there's going to be more work to do?
This Rebels set of episodes was so sophisticated that I don't think this is going to be the end of this story for Ezra. I don't think the writers would do us the disservice of saying, okay, two episodes of going down a dark path with Ezra, and now he's going to shake it off and everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel right. I feel like he is going to have to confront the 6 months of resentment and fear and trauma that he has built up.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I don't know if the dark side is going to let go of Ezra that easily.
You know, the Bendu has, I think, some real nice equanimity to that. So the Bendu is voiced by Tom Baker, who is the fourth Doctor Who, in this absolutely deeply sonorous voice. And it's actually like interesting that Kanan can't see the Bendu because he wanders into the wilds. He dips down into this sort of like little amphitheater crater thing. Mm-hmm. And then Atalon is covered in these massive like coral fungus things, and one of them starts wriggling and stands up, and it is a 20-foot tall ox thing.
It just, you see one extremely long, dirty, curved toenail, and you're like, wait, that's a foot.
It's a big creature.
Actually, so I read some of the concept art from this episode, and the Bendu was originally supposed to be like miles long, and the rebels were supposed to have built their base accidentally on his back.
Oh.
And they come back from a mission and the station is gone because the Bendu moved.
Yeah, so that's why they were originally going to call that episode The Mystery of Chopper Base.
Yeah, because where did the base go? It's on Bendu's back.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but he's still this ginormous, beautiful, mysterious, god-looking creature.
He also has eyes that are like glowing white, right? Like not really quite glowing. They do look like he's blinded also.
I didn't pick up on that.
But when Kanan, he's like, I see conflict in you. And Kanan's like, yeah, I'm holding this holocron. Be careful with it. And the Bendu just like, with the force, opens it wide open to a random page. He's like, ah, yes, a Sith holocron. Kanan's like, be careful with that. And then it's revealed that the source of conflict is not anything related to what Kanan's carrying. It's within him.
Yeah, I really liked that point about an object cannot make you evil. Only you can change yourself.
And so I wonder if, like, it's not that the dark side has a hold. It's that, like, your own desires are what gives the dark side a hold on you.
Ooh.
And I think that's what Ezra is talking about, that when he's arguing with Kanan, first off, he's like, it taught me things that I use to protect our friends and have success. And Kanan's like, yes, but at what cost?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be supported by the canon.
Mm-hmm.
It also, once again, we talked about this in the season 2 finale, it cheapens Anakin's fall to the dark side again, because it proves that your desires, ill-maintained, are what allow you to fall to the dark side, and for nothing.
And that's like what all the Jedi all the time forever are talking about, is like, you need to remove desires and emotions and fears from yourself, because they are what attaches you to the dark side. The light side is there for you freely all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What takes away from it is you.
Yeah. And also, Ezra's desire is very, very close to Anakin's. I'll never let my friends get hurt again.
Mm-hmm. Because he blames himself for Ahsoka dying and Kanan getting blinded.
Did Ahsoka die?
And according to their point of view, almost certainly, right? So from their point of view, they leave the temple in a huff. It's just like Ezra driving, because Kanan is like ruffling through the med pack trying to find something to hold his face together. Ugh. And then it explodes violently. And the last thing that Ezra saw was Ahsoka pushing him back into the ship as the door closes, as Darth Vader is about to clobber her with a lightsaber. And then, of course, they're like, it's been 6 months. Surely there's been sightings of Darth Vader somewhere else in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think there's actually a line. The only clue we get about Ahsoka is one of the imps is talking, and they're like, Lord Vader dealt with the insurgency's Jedi problem.
Yes.
These rebels have proved particularly stubborn.
Yeah, yeah, which is interesting.
Which makes it sound like Vader is alive. Ahsoka
is out of the picture.
Gone.
I think, according to Ezra's point of view, she is gone. Although, the little Duolingo owl
still alive.
Still alive and just resting on the Bendu's shoulder.
Yeah. What I wrote down, because I was intrigued by how the Bendu introduces himself, he says, yeah, the Jedi inhabit the Ashla, the Sith inhabit the Bogan. Mm-hmm. I am the Bendu.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you saying your name is Bendu or that you are inhabiting the middle space of the Force? Is Ahsoka also the Bendu?
Oh, good question. Yeah. The Bendu is such an interesting concept because we've spent so much time talking about the light and the dark. And the Bendu is, you know, pleased as punch to have been given a gift, regardless of the fact if it was a Sith holocron or not, because that's like not the point. The point is
cool, spicy censored literature. Yeah. I love this.
It contains all the knowledge of the Sith. I don't need that because I inhabit the knowledge of balance.
Ooh.
Yeah, it seems like the Bendu is a creature of balance between light and dark.
And the light and the dark have no power over him because he does not desire what they could give him.
Yes.
Because he already has what he needs.
Which is balance.
I feel like all the puzzle pieces are fitting together because the Sith holocron, which, by the way, we didn't talk about this last week, but I noticed it last week too, has Asajj Ventress's voice.
Yeah, nice.
And it says to Ezra, what do you desire next?
Hmm.
And the Bendu does not appear to desire.
It's interesting that this reminds me of the fifth season of Babylon 5, because the premise of Babylon 5 is there's a handful of like, it's a couple hundred years in the future. And there's a couple of space races that are like humans and they all have like similar power levels. And then there's these like really high level ones. And the high level ones always ask you a question. And the bad ones are like, what do you want? And the good ones are, who are you? But then it is, of course, incumbent upon humanity and the other races to like grow beyond these questions of like being offered infinite power. I think that that's at play here as well, that the light side is remove yourself and the dark side is empower yourself. How can you make yourself better? And the Bendu is like, are you yourself?
Yeah.
Like, which once you are secure in yourself, you don't need to remove any and you don't need to gain any.
I feel like the Bendu was saying, understand yourself.
Yes, because that is what he is saying to Kanan the whole time. He's just tearing him a new one as far as like, is that really your feelings? And Kanan's like, I guess not.
Yeah. So I think the Bendu was a beautiful extension of the idea from previous seasons of Rebels, when in doubt, ask a Jedi Master.
Yes.
But the temple on Lothal has been destroyed, so they no longer have a hotline to Yoda, so they can't call Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Kanan finds the Bendu, who is honestly like 10,000% more useful than Yoda. But why do you think the Bendu would bother to intervene with Kanan at all?
So at the very beginning, we hear the Bendu's voice saying, I hear you. And it's as if on this whole Force planet of Atalon, and it's covered in its beautiful coral and its various creatures, and there's some rebels who are, you know, making use of it as a base. And then the Bendu is sitting there meditating in the Force, just basking in it. And then there's this being who shows up and who's asking the Force to show him the way.
Mm.
And the Bendu's like, all right, buddy, like it's been 6 months. You're still asking. Get over here and I'll show you. Like, I don't know what you're asking, but I'm annoyed with my neighbors, so I'm going to go over and take your trash out for you.
Turn your boombox down. It is so loud.
Yeah, or at least play good songs.
God, 6 months is a very long time to sit out in the desert meditating.
But as Kanan is referring to, it's grief. He is mourning Ahsoka. He is mourning his eyes. He is mourning his relationship with his beautiful wife, who he'll never see again.
And his, oh, no.
And his kids, who he'll never see again.
Oh, Sam.
And the mission that he had that he feels like he failed. Because even though he destroyed, even though the Inquisitors were killed and that's no longer a problem, he's like, well, Maul's still out there, don't know what he wants. Darth Vader's still out there, and luckily he hasn't turned his baleful eye towards us. So this was the worst possible outcome that could still be considered a success.
Oh, And they trained so hard to get ready.
They did.
They really put their backs into it.
And so he is left with this feeling of, I gave it everything and it wasn't enough. And the Bendu's like, what wasn't enough? What is enough?
Yeah, Sam, it's the thing that you say to me all the time. Kanan defeated Maul with three moves without his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But it is possible to make no mistakes and still lose.
Yes.
It's possible to win and lose at the same time.
Yeah.
Kanan won the battle, lost his eyes and his apprentice.
Yeah, it was a Pyrrhic victory. Another victory like that and we'll be ruined. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is so interesting. I'm also curious, what do you think about how Hera dealt with all of this?
Hera plays a pretty minor role in both of these episodes.
Exactly.
And it's an interesting thing. I've been in recovery communities, there's an element of how much to push the addict and like how much to be up in their grill because people are driven by resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Hera probably would have been able to recognize in herself and her relationship with Kanan that if she rolled up to his meditation spot where he's surrounded by like these three little snail acolytes who are learning the lightsaber with twigs from him, that if she had been like, you need to do something, he would have been like, I am doing something. Get off my back, woman. And I think that like maybe she has been doing this whole time and today was a different day, or maybe she's been throwing herself into her work and they've been separating in a meaningful way, or she is recognizing in him that he needs time to grieve. I think that as far as what General Syndulla is doing, she is running multiple missions across a wide theater. And she's like, I'm promoting Ezra because these things need a Jedi. He's doing great. The results speak for themselves. Go off and do things. Spectre team, Phoenix team, go do this. Firebird team, go do that. Like, she's running a war.
Yeah, and it's not that Ezra is doing great. It's that he's delivering results.
Yes.
And she's like, I need at least one of our two Jedi to be delivering the payday.
Because I think she loves Kanan in, you know, a real way that she might have a different love with the rest of the Spectres with. Like, they're her found family, but Kanan is her love. And so she is, in a way, enabling Kanan, but that of like by giving him the time and space he needs, but giving him the time and space he needs is the right move in the end.
Yeah, well, that's what I wrote down, was my confusion over whether she was enabling Kanan to be a deadbeat dad and sit and fester in his grief, or if she was giving him the gift of enough time to process.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hera is a very hands-on mom.
Yeah.
We see her parenting style many, many times throughout the first two seasons of Rebels, and she butts in where needed. And so when she backed off so hard from Kanan and let him sit out in the desert for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
it was almost too all-loving and perfect.
Mm.
She was almost too good. It was almost unrealistic to me that she would let him yeet off and be AWOL for 6 months and not demand him to do more.
On the other hand, perhaps the meditation has been less than 6 months. Perhaps it was a gradual entry into this permanent meditative state. Perhaps he did try to help out as best as he could, but what use is a blind person in a rebellion? And he probably tried to pull out his lightsaber and do some dueling, but he was not nearly as capable. And so now he's like, I need to be spending at least, you know, 2 hours a day focusing so I could learn to see. And she's like, cool. And he's like, all right, I'm upping that to 4 hours a day. All right, I'm upping it to 8 hours a day. All right, I'm upping it to 16 hours a day of meditation because I'm getting progress.
Mm-hmm.
And so he perhaps has been showing progress. And now that the situation has changed, the moment is actually really nice because Sato and Hera are like, yep, Ezra's gone off the rails. We're going to need to go mobilize the fleet. And Hera's like, all right, climbing into the Ghost, and Kanan's already there
in the co-pilot
seat. Yeah. And he's like, Ezra's in trouble. Let's go. And she's like, you're back.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah. And it was a surprise to her, but she's ready for it. So I think she set up that relationship in faith that he would recover at some point.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's so disgustingly healthy that it icks me out. I'm like, come on, Hera.
Just yell at your man from time to time.
Please, can you yell at your man one time so the rest of us feel like you are not perfect?
But I think she might know, perhaps from like the fact that she's yelled at her dad before, that she's like, if I yell at Kanan, he's going to be like, our good friend who got us into, like, who taught me so much of the Force, is dead. I am blinded. Like, I need time to recover mentally and spiritually and learn. So, like, you can say, come on all you want, but I'm not useful to you now.
Okay. So let me see what you think about this. Rather than seeing Hera as passively accepting her husband's complete and utter abandonment of their family, mm-hmm. you think that Hera had the wisdom and intuition to know that he was working on it and was going to come back when he was ready. And so she took the action, not the passivity, but the action of letting him have the time he needed.
Either she perceived and knew that, or she trusted him.
Okay, yeah. I like that.
And he has been, especially presumably now, after the events at the end of season two, right, like the last time they see each other, I think he has been probably more communicative about what's going on.
Yeah, when he shows up in Ezra's room for the first heart-to-heart, he sounds just like himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that he hasn't been around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a complex meditation on grief and autonomy and the space that you're allowed to take up or not in the world. So I've had a lot of very conflicting thoughts about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the Bendu speaking to balance is an interesting way of doing that, because as we've talked through all of this difference between the light side and the dark side of the Force, going back to the Mortis arc, the real strength was in the balance, right? Like, that was what the father was. And that was the role that Anakin was being groomed for, and he failed to uphold.
He said, yeah, I don't want balance. I want both. I want 100% of both.
Uh-huh.
Which is not actually balance, it turns out.
Which is not actually balance.
You don't add 100 and 100 and get 100.
Mm-hmm.
You get
200. So
learn your math, Anakin. Take an algebra class, my dude.
So the Bendu is this creature of saying, like, you are a creature of your fears, and so remove your fears. You're a creature of your wants, so remove your wants. You're a creature of your desires, so remove your desires, but still be you.
Yeah, I mean, is that not what the Jedi were teaching?
You know, that is an interesting delineation. I think that the Jedi, I think that the Jedi possibly go far as saying, like, your sense of self belongs to the Force. And the Bendu says, your sense of self is your sense of self. Keep it clean. I'm just trying to draw a line that contains all the information that I've perceived from them.
Well, and also the Bendu doesn't give Kanan any instructions with what to do once he's emptied himself of the Force.
Yes.
There's no agenda there. The Jedi would say, empty yourself of everything but the Force and then go out and promote peace. And the Bendu's like, I don't care what you do. I did what I promised, which was help you see.
Mm-hmm.
What you do with that information and ability is up to you.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting characters.
While we have some time left, I can feel your desire to talk about Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Oh, wow. It's a low-key introduction. So Grand Admiral Thrawn is a character of Timothy Zahn, and this is actually probably the most this meta narrative repeated over and over again is where the fanboys and the fan base disagree here, because Grand Admiral Thrawn was invented by Timothy Zahn in the Heir to the Empire trilogy, and he is great.
When were those published?
The 90s, okay. Early 90s, late 80s. And they're interesting. They're cool. Grand Admiral Thrawn is this character. He sees right through your BS. He's like, you're doing X, Y, Z. You are of this species, which means you don't think as much out of your peripheral vision. Therefore, your tactical plan is going to fail here. Your strategic plan is going to fail here. Your artwork favors the color red, which means you're going to try to get in close because that is the blood of your species, of your prey species, but not your species. So you're going to be very aggressive.
You mean he's got lasers for eyes and he lasers you.
He does. One of the really fun things about the Heir to the Empire trilogy, I've read quite a few of Zahn's works, and I think Heir to the Empire is a very strong one. I have not read his new canon Thrawn trilogy, but the original trilogy, and then they imported this character in. He's never the first person point of view. It's always from someone else in the room who's watching him, just to make him seem a little bit more alien. And one of the other legends things is that historically there were like only ever a few grand admirals. You had to be really, really outrageously successful to be promoted to grand admiral.
Is grand admiral above Moff?
I don't think specific, they're different career tracks.
Okay, because doesn't Governor Price call Tarkin Moff Tarkin?
Yes. Okay. So Tarkin is a Moff, which is like a secretary of a department or a senator. Like they control a region and they control a like an entire bureaucracy.
Like the outer rim.
Mm-hmm. Whereas a admiral would have a subfleet, and a grand admiral would control like one of the numbered fleets, in this case the 7th fleet.
Have we heard of the 7th fleet?
Not before this, no.
Okay. So Tarkin currently outranks Grand Admiral Thrawn, who is the head of the 7th fleet.
Yes, and Governor Price, who presumably directly like controls several planets and reports to Tarkin, is like, I wish to upgrade from my current admiral Constantine, who's a doof, up to Grand Admiral. And Tarkin's like, yes, you actually perceive the situation correctly.
Okay. This is all making sense.
So Thrawn is scary. He sees right through these rebels' plans. His books are fantastic. He's really interesting. He often will do very clever moves. He's always kind of two steps ahead. And so to defeat him, you got to be either like four steps backwards or like four steps ahead.
Or just not have a plan in your brain.
Yeah.
And just improv.
And he actually takes that into account too. No. So he is a very worthy foe for Hera.
Oh.
Because up until this point, who was the foe of season 2? It was the Inquisitors.
Uh-huh.
And they're dead. So Kanan has a foe. His foe is himself. Ezra has a foe. His foe is himself. Who's Hera fighting now? She's fighting Thrawn.
Yeah, I thought she was fighting the Empire as a whole, but I guess she kind of does need to focus her attention on something.
Yeah. So we're going to see a lot more of Thrawn, and I'm very excited for that. He is a fantastic villain. He's a ton of fun. He's very scary and methodical and thoughtful. And yeah, he's cool. Out of all the people who know that Anakin and Darth Vader are the same person, I am 100% sure in that small handful of people that Thrawn is one of them.
Oh, I'm sure he's put the pieces together. I mean, he took a galaxy's worth of data points and identified 2, which is that there was a prison break on Narcana,
mm-hmm.
and there was a shuttle in the Mining Guild's territory that got blown up. It's en route to our Y-Wing factory.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, the rebels are heading there using information that they got from Hondo Onaka. And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
So some of the other things about Thrawn that might be important, and I should probably read the Thrawn, the new trilogy, so I know what's up with him. When he was younger, he served, I don't think alongside Anakin, but maybe once. And he is a member of a species called the Chiss. The Chiss have the Chiss Ascendancy, which is out on the other side of the galaxy. And ostensibly, Thrawn joined the Empire because he saw that as the best way to defend against a larger threat.
What is the larger threat?
It is differently explored in Legends and canon, and I don't think I am aware of which is which at this point. But he joins because he's like, my people have this very complex social order and high technology, and we need to join forces with the Empire to defend the galaxy against something.
So the feeling that I'm getting from the Chiss, and I'm 90% sure this is because it sounds like chess, mm-hmm. they remind me of the Vulcans in Star Trek.
A little bit.
Are they, as a species, extremely analytical and big picture slash detail oriented, or is Thrawn a star?
Thrawn is the only one we get to see in Canon Works.
Okay.
But he is famous enough that, so in order to become a Grand Admiral, Palpatine, as Darth Sidious, has to be like, this one in particular is the right tool for the job. So out of the presumably hundreds of admirals, and then there's probably like high admirals who do the administrative work and promote them back and forth, and like there's this massive bureaucracy to run the Empire, to be good enough at being an admiral to be promoted to a grand admiral is you have specifically done something which Palpatine sees as cunning. And if Palpatine is like, that's cunning, you did a good job. Like you were very, very, very cunning.
Yeah. I mean, if Titus could be an admiral, then the jump to grand admiral must
significant.
Be significant, because yeah. he is a dum-dum.
Yeah, Titus and Constantine pale to insignificance next to the shining star, which is Thrawn.
Even next to Miro.
Or, you know, like Kallus.
Kallus is also highly strategic. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Fascinating, alarming, unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
Not looking forward to Hera pitting herself against such a pitiless foe.
Yeah, he does, you know, out of all the times we actually see interesting military maneuvers in science fiction, like honest to God, I've been playing through Mass Effect, and the number of times Admiral Hackett says, give it everything you got. I'm just like, just save some reserves for something. Come on.
Give me some strategy, man.
Yeah. So this idea of like Thrawn saying, ah, yes, they brought in their carrier. They brought in two blockade runners. That's not a whole rebel cell.
They've got five Y-wings.
Yeah. If I were to destroy it now, then I would slow them down. But what I really need to do is get all the rebels in one place and blow them up.
But you know what I really appreciated about their different perspectives is that Thrawn says, let them escape with their five old shizzy Y-wings.
Mm-hmm. Hey, as Rex would say, those Y-wings are solid in combat operations.
I repeat, why not Y-wings? Hera looks at those five Y-wings and says, wow, the rebellion is growing every day.
Yeah.
They rescued enough Y-wings that they don't even need them for Phoenix Squadron. They're sending them off to bolster another wing of the rebellion.
Yeah, Dodonna's squadron on Yavin.
So I do like that Thrawn's perspective is not the only one we're getting. He's like, this is insignificant. And Hera's like, this is a significant victory.
Yeah.
So who's right? Maybe both.
Thrawn would say both. Hera would say Hera.
Okay.
That's the way Thrawn thinks. Thrawn is like, I would prefer that you take all of your meager victories and line them up, and then I just set you up in a domino trap.
Well,
because that's that works out to be me, because Thrawn, especially in the trilogy books, he's so short of forces continuously that he has to use the absolute bare minimum available to him to get outsized results. And that often means retreating.
Huh.
And like being on the retreat all the time, but still winning, that's the exact opposite of a Pyrrhic victory like Kanan and Ezra and Ahsoka had. Thrawn would never give up his most powerful force user in exchange for what? He'd be like, we have a different plan that involves keeping our forces alive and still winning.
Oh, no.
Which is not how the Empire has been working up until now, because they're like, hey, we bought all these stormtrooper outfits. Mayday defended them on that stupid ice moon with crosshair for 2 years, just for no reason. We got them on sale price. We got to use them up. And Thrawn's like, every single move we make needs to be in the interests of a tactical, strategic, and logistical advantage. We cannot throw away any resources whatsoever.
Sam, you're scaring me.
Thrawn is so scary.
I don't care for this one bit. I wish to be excluded from this narrative, and I wish for my beautiful family also to not have this opponent in their ring.
Well, unfortunately, that's who they got, so.
Wow. Because of Ezra's slightly modulated character arc, like from the depths of the dark side to who knows what's up with Ezra, mm-hmm. I was feeling kind of reassured, and now I'm deeply not.
Oh, good. I cannot overstate the threat that Thrawn poses.
Yeah. It's just Rebels is getting bigger and scarier every episode. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
It starts so small.
It does.
And happy.
Mm-hmm.
And peaceful. And there's Meylu Ran jokes. And like...
And they're rescuing a baby Wookiee in like the first episode.
Oh my God, that was so cute. I loved the baby episode.
And they rescue farmers. And they rescue little babies from Inquisitors.
And they break for space whales.
And they did that hilarious thing where they stole the disruptors from Minister Tua by faking having an education in Aqualish.
Oh my gosh. And they impersonate Imperials.
Yeah.
Big stormtrooper and mini stormtrooper and Chopper dressed up like an Imperial astromech and like make fools of everybody.
And they steal a TIE fighter and paint it crazily and use it to sneak on board another ship.
And it was a romp. Where's my romp?
Well, we'll see if Thrawn decides to let them have a romp today.
Oh, oh no. Thanks. I hate it. I feel like you just said to me, don't worry, it gets worse.
Don't worry, it gets worse.
God, I wish we could swear on this podcast.
Well, on that note, let's talk about who's who on this episode. Let's do Baywatch.
Baywatch. I bet you one dinner date that I can guess who your bae is.
All right. Do I get to choose the place?
The place, the time, and the dinner.
Okay, cool.
Where are you taking me?
Where am I taking you? Where are you taking me? Make your guess.
You're going to pick Thrawn.
No.
What?
Yeah.
Who are you picking?
The Bendu.
That's who I picked.
Well, all right. Well, that's two votes for the Bendu.
I still have to take you out to dinner?
Yeah.
Where do you want to go?
I'll tell you later.
He wants the finest wining and dining in all of Denver.
I want the finest. Only the fine. I want little snails. Like
he wants a
snail
place
creatures.
Where Thrawn would go to admire the caviar and the wine.
Yeah.
And say, this is subpar, but fine.
Thrawn would appreciate every single food brought before him. He would intake like the flavor combinations, and then he would know where the chef parked. Anyway, I'm choosing the Bendu because the idea of being above, beyond, around, through the Force in such a way, like, I think if Kanan had been out there for another 6 years, he would have become a Bendu. You know, he would have just like perhaps slowly learned and meditated to become one with the Force. I think that's what Yoda is trying to do from a different perspective.
On like, Dagobah?
Yeah, he's like trying to become a creature of the light, but he's on a profoundly dark planet. So this concept back and forth of finding your place in the Force as a Force user, as a Force being. Because when Kanan says, are you a Force wielder? The Bendu's like, wielder? Yeah, no, like I don't pick up the Force. I am a being of the Force. I can perceive the Force, but all things can. Everything is in the Force. Everything is in balance. It's where it's in imbalance that something can like power, you know, something can lift things up. But I am just a being of the Force. And I find it so cool.
Yeah, I'm picking the Bendu for similar reasons. I love beings that are ancient and also unburdened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the Sith represent an ancient lineage and the Jedi represent an ancient lineage. And the Bendu is definitely older than them.
The concept of the Bendu is older than them. But I mean, who knows what this ox creature thing is?
How small do you think he was when he was born? Was he born?
Maybe he was bigger when he was born and he's getting smaller.
Sam.
What? Maybe. I mean, maybe he was a whole planet and has become like a creature. Like, it's genuinely impossible to say. This is so strange and eldritch, and I love it. I love the idea of a creature that is just, like, of course the Bendu wouldn't pick up a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Of course not.
He is bigger and above that. And mm-hmm. I'm picking him for giving Kanan a tool. Because a tool is just like what the Bendu was saying about an object. Mm-hmm. You pick up a hammer and you can build a house or you can smash someone's skull in.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Bendu was like, I will give you the tool of learning how to see again. And then you decide what you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's rad.
I think so too. And I think it is actually what Kanan really needed, and I think Kanan specifically needed it because he no longer had a being of neutrality in his life in the form of Ahsoka.
Yes.
Because Ahsoka was probably training him on this stuff as well. Although Ahsoka honestly doesn't seem like a great teacher these days.
No, she's not really seeming to apply any of her old learnings to the Force.
She's having to find a new path. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe she should talk to the Bendu.
Maybe.
Maybe she is the Bendu.
Probably not.
Okay. That'd be rad, though. That'd be so punk.
Well, next week we are watching season 3, episodes 3 and 4, The Holocrons of Fate and the Antilles Extraction.
Antilles Extraction, not Achilles, like your heel. Antilles, like what?
Like Antilles.
Like the islands?
Yeah. They're extracting them off of Earth and taking them into space.
Interesting.
Do you start with the greater Antilles or the lesser Antilles when you extract them into space aboard a Star Destroyer?
Probably the lesser, so you can do a dry run. See how you did.
Well, they're islands, so it'd be difficult to do a dry run.
Do a wet run.
There you go.
Gross. I'm sorry that I said that out loud.
This is all you. This is entirely your fault.
That sounded way less gross in my head.
As always, you can find us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads. And you can also find us on Patreon.
We are having a grand old time moving through Visions Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
These visions are excellent. And we cry, we laugh, we converse.
One of the recent ones, we cried, but it was like joyful tears, yeah. Which is the first time in season 2 that's happened.
It was so dark and scary. And then all of a sudden, it was claymation and joy.
Yeah.
So and we loved it so much.
So that is, you know, as life mirrors reality, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. So
One of the best things you can do if you love Growing Up Skywalker is drop us 5 stars on the platform that you are listening on. And you can also write us a little love note. Also, if you're listening on Spotify, we do encourage you to check out the little questions that we leave for you on each episode. Mm-hmm. We got some good commentary last week on not only were our favorite apprentices stepping into darkness, experiencing a twilight, but so was Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was great, and I appreciate that. Give us more.
Sometimes we run out of time to talk during the episode. But rest assured, if you just hung out with us, we talk about this stuff all the time anyway.
All the time. And you should send this episode to someone who has given you a tool.
Ooh. You should send this episode to someone who has had a tool delivered the moment before you need it because they perceived a need before you did.
Sam, that's so specific.
That's Thrawn style.
Oh my God.
Thrawn gives the best gifts.
If you have that person, send it to them.
Send it to Thrawn because then he'll put it in everyone's ears.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.